Hello, and welcome to Mother Daughter Earthcast, a show that will help you navigate the eco world and live a more colorful and conscious life. We'll inform, inspire, and embolden you.
And most importantly, we'll have fun along the way to a more planet-caring lifestyle together. Welcome to Mother Daughter Earthcast, and this is our first remote podcast we've ever done. We are thrilled to be here with Linda Dunn at the John Bunker Sands Wetland Center, and we're going to be talking to Linda about how they educate the public about the importance of water and how to conserve it, and all they are doing so many exciting things here. So welcome to Mother Daughter Earthcast.
Well, thank you so much. I was so grateful that you all called us and wanted to include us, and just you know, seeing what you guys do and on your website was really awesome.
Well, thanks for having us. And for listeners who can't see us, Mom and I will be sharing a microphone today. So this is going to be an interesting little dynamic. Linda, if you don't know, lots of times during our podcast, my mom and I will be like, not fighting to be the one to ask the question, but we'll be like, oh no, it's my turn. So maybe now that I have control of the mic, this is going to be interesting.
I was just thinking about that, how I was going to wrangle in my questions sometimes.
Y'all, this is going to be great. Linda, to get us started and to tell our listeners a bit about, you know, what y'all do here, can you tell us more about the history, what exactly y'all do at the center, and just all of the amazing things that you guys are offering to not only the environment and our ecosystem, but also to the general public? I think it'd be great for them to know.
Sure, you bet. So we are the John Bunker Sands Wetland Center, and we are located in Combine, Texas, in the middle of a 2,000-acre constructed wetland. The wetland was built by the North Texas Municipal Water District. It opened in 2011 to provide water for those who live in North Texas. Collin County is included in that, the whole county. There are some other cities like Garland, Mesquite, that are included in that as well. So it's a water reuse system in which we take water. We don't take it. North Texas takes that water out of the East Fork of the Trinity, filters it through the wetland. The wetland is about 2 miles in length, takes about 7 to 10 days, and then that water is piped back to Lake Levan through a 43-mile pipeline. So we are the educational center for that. We are our own nonprofit. We partner with North Texas Municipal Water District, and we also partner with the Rosewood Corporation. Part of the property that we access belongs to both of those entities, and so they're both of our partners and allow us to do some really great things instead of just sticking to our little 1.5 acres here where the nature center is. And we do have a nature center that has classrooms and a gallery area. We have programming out here. So that's kind of a little bit about a little bit of history. The center opened in 2010.
And who came up with this idea? This is a fascinating place.
Yeah, that's a great question, because we're called the John Bunker Sands Wetland Center, yet we have these two other partners, and how did that happen? So John Bunker Sands obviously is an actual person, and he, back in the late 80s, early 90s, had considering making constructed wetlands to filter water off the East Fork of the Trinity, and he would put it back in the East Fork of the Trinity cleaner, and he would use that as like a mitigation project for people who maybe disrupted wetlands in another part of Texas. They could come here and buy credits, and he would then, you know, filter that water. Well, unfortunately, John Bunker passed away in 2003. He was not able to do that particular project because he was a private individual. And this is a levee on the river that was built in the 1940s, and you cannot destroy a levee built by the Corps of Engineers unless you actually go to Congress and ask, hey, can we do this? So as a private individual, he put his story on the shelf back in 91, 92. And we fast forward to 2003, John Bunker passes away, forward to 2006, and North Texas Municipal Water District needs to have extra water, because at that time, if you remember, that was a hugely growing part of Texas. And so they needed another source of water. They came up with a new idea to build a wetland and pull the water out and filter it and ship it to Lavon. So they approached the family and said, hey, we need a large piece of property. Can we purchase some 2,000 acres for you for our great new project? And little did they know that John Bunker had this idea back in the late 80s and the early 90s. So cool. And what's even more cool is John Bunker had hired the same wetland firm as North Texas did. And so they actually had all his plans, all his aerial photos, everything to build this wetland.
Wow.
And so, yeah, if you look at the maps that we have and the one that's built now, you can tell they used his original plan. So obviously the center's named for John Bunker Sands because it was his vision. Because I don't know if a family would have sold all of that property if that was not his vision.
Yeah. Okay, I already have so many questions. Was this area originally wetland before the levees were built? And is that why it's restoration, or can we call it restoration even if it wasn't wetlands to begin with?
Sure, that's a great question. This was not wetlands. This was a pasture okay. land. Back in the, I think it's the 30s and 40s, there was cotton that was on the farm. We actually have the Cave family owned it, and we are in touch with them. So it's kind of cool to see the history before the wetland was here. Actually, John Bunker was creating those wetlands because he was having issues when it rained, the river would flood and it would flood all of his fields. Mm. And so that was his whole thing. Well, I might as well just turn it into wetlands. And they're also big duck hunters. So it was to be a habitat for ducks and all of that. So that was the reasoning behind it being a wetland. So it's not a restoration. It was just, we're in the bottomland hardwood forests down by the river. And so that floods quite often too. So,
So given that this wasn't originally wetland, can this be a blueprint for other municipalities that are looking to take a creative approach to water filtration? Tell us a little bit about that, about how maybe people can learn from what y'all are doing here and how this is innovative. And honestly, from what I've done, the research I've done, and I won't put words in your mouth, but in my opinion, a better way to go about water filtration,
Correct. Just
more efficient. You're building an ecosystem, just all, it's ticking so many boxes. So especially that this wasn't originally wetlands, how can this be used as an example for other areas that are wanting to maybe do something similar?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get asked that a lot. So this is a great solution. And it has been done by some other places north of Atlanta. They already had a wetland doing this. And then even in Texas, there was a wetland down by Richland Chambers that was used as the prototype for this one, but it was very small, I think 300 acres, and they were going to see how it worked. And although this is a very great way to do it, and more people should, it's a little more difficult than you would think, because if you look at Dallas, so you're thinking, well, gosh, they're right on the Trinity River. Why can't they do something like this, pull the Trinity water? And it's already in a floodplain. But this took 2,000 acres of property. And there's not a lot of property in Texas, because as you know, only 3% is public property and the rest is private. And so on private land, there's not too many places that have a large enough piece of land to be able to do something like this, or it's already been developed, as the case of the Trinity River. Tarrant Regional Water District, after the pilot project down at Richland Chambers, they did build out a wetland, but it's quite a ways from Tarrant Regional. If you think in the Richland Chambers is 70 miles or so away, and they have a pipeline going all the way from there to Richland Chambers. So they had to go quite a ways to, and they partnered with Texas Parks and Wildlife, so they are actually on public property. Runs a little bit differently than this one since this is private. But we have a lot of people that are coming to find out about wetlands, how they can use them. It's a great engineering project. Everything has to be just right engineering-wise for it to work. But that's a great question. It would be great if people could take it, and some do, but it's, I think, the amount of land that's needed for it, and also the water rights. Texas water rights are a lot different than water rights in other states, and so other states may not be able to take water off of the river. It might not be permissible. So those are other things that need to be looked at as well.
So, Linda, tell us how the water filters through the wetlands and what happens to the water as it's filtering through. And then I guess what's the water like at the beginning of the wetlands, mm-hmm. and what is it like at the end of the wetlands?
Sure, sure. That's something that we like to know too, because you know, you think, oh, what are these wetlands doing out here? So basically, the water in the Trinity River and in the East Fork of the Trinity River, which is by us, they are about 95 to 98% effluent, which is actually water from the wastewater treatment plants. If you ask somebody where their water goes, most likely they may not know. But it does go to the wastewater treatment plant. All of the undesirables are taken out of the wastewater. And then the rest of that actually gets put back into the environment. They take out the nitrates, the phosphates, the ammonias. Actually, they don't take those out. They take the other stuff out and leave those to run into the environment. And they don't hurt the environment at all, but that is effluent that's there. So what happens in the East Fork here is North Texas pulls out about 70% of the water that people have used by their constituents. So North Collin County, we're talking Frisco, Allen, like I mentioned earlier, Mesquite, Garland, and mm-hmm. several other cities, they use that water. So they're taking that water back out and they'll put it into the wetland. And then that water flows through the 2,000-acre wetland, and the plants that are growing there, we're talking cattails, pickerel weed, bulrush, and I think it's 20-some-odd native plants that make up the wetland. The water will travel through those plants, and those plants actually filter out the nitrates, the phosphates, the heavy metals, and phosphates actually will go down into the soil column. And then the plants will take out the remaining nutrients, and so now it's getting filtered as it's going through the wetland.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what plants do. You don't think they're just sitting out there doing nothing, but really they're doing this incredible process by actually removing chemicals from water. Who would ever think a plant could do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so the plants do that for about 7 to 10 days, and then it reaches our conveyance pump station. And that is where they have a 43-mile, 6-foot pipeline that goes all the way to Lake Levan. And it puts about 15 to 20%, or 10 to 20, depending on what water is needed in Lake Levan, will go from here back to Lake Levan. And back in the droughts of 2011, if you remember those, Lake Levan almost went dry. It didn't go dry because of the wetland. At the time, they thought the wetland could only give 10% of water back to Lake Levan, or 10% of the total. But they really pushed the wetland at the time because they had to, and they found it could probably go up to 20% of the water supply for Lake Levan.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing you talk about, you know, these different plants and whatnot filtering the water. So let's just say, even if people couldn't have a massive amount of land to create a true wetland, mm-hmm. could, let's say, the city of Dallas, for example, plant some of these plants along the Trinity River, and would they still be able to filter things out that way? Or does it really need to be in this kind of like non-running water scenario? I mean, could we just incorporate these plants more into our existing bodies of water?
Oh, that's a great question. It's interesting that you asked that, because I have a really great answer for you.
Yay!
Because of what, or example, I should say. So, you could, and there are cattails probably along the Trinity, but your water does have to remain just a bit for that to you know, filter slowly through, which is what it does here. But as far as the Trinity River goes, there's one organization called waterisalive.org, and they were out here for a summer camp that we did with senior high school students just 2 weeks ago. And she is actually placing biofilters, which is what your plants are, into different rivers around the North Texas area. And what she uses is mycelium, which is your fungus. And she puts them in burlap bags and makes these biofilters and puts them into the river, and they function as a filter. And that whole process is called phytoremediation. Phyto meaning plant, remediation meaning bringing it into balance. So the process of phytoremediation happens with that biofilter she's building, and then also out here. So I know that's one way that some people are doing it, but when it comes to the plants here, and to get it real effective for that way, I believe they need to sit for a while, so it's a little bit slower of a process going through. The biofilters she puts in there and leaves them there, and so the water flows through them too. So the mycelium or the fungus may phytoremediate a little bit better as far as flowing water goes.
So, interesting.
Yeah, you'll need to talk with her. No. Yeah, she's awesome. She's so great. Uh-huh. She was out here. Her name's Virginia Kilgore, and it was amazing. The kids loved her.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you are the educational manager here, mm-hmm. and tell us how the wetlands is used for research or mm-hmm. education, and it's just in the center y'all have here is fabulous.
Yeah, well, we want to say that our education is, we're kind of the, what's the word I'm looking for? Can't think of it right now, of course. But anyway, we do have education programs here. And because the wetland is what it is, we do attract a certain type of class here. So all of our programming is from 4th through 12th grade. We don't do the primary grades because a lot of their TEKS, or the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills that they have to follow for the state, can be achieved by going elsewhere. And when we first started doing programming in 2010, when we opened, we filled up really quickly with schools that were 4th grade and up. And so we still were telling people, no, you can't come because we're full. We don't have any place for you. So we limited it to 4th through 12th grade. And we center on wetland ecology, obviously, because of what we are, water conservation, wildlife management, and then birds. You can see the birds and hear them probably in
yes,
the background.
Yes, they're amazing.
So we do a wetland ecology class, which is our core program, and all of our classes that we do out here are a field study. In fact, we call our trips field studies, not field trips. Mm. Any of the students coming out will come out, they'll collect data, which for whichever class they take, and then bring it back into the classroom and try to determine something about their data, whether it was a hypothesis that they formed or the question that they came up with for the class. We will go out. Our main one is wetland ecology. We attract a lot of the AP environmental classes because it's right there in their test. Mm-hmm. We attract the aquatic science classes out here. And I would say probably about 60% of our programming is high school, which is rather unique for a nature center, but it's because of the wetland. If the mm-hmm. wetland wasn't here, we wouldn't probably have that going on. And so they'll go out in the field, they'll collect water samples, they'll collect aquatic insects or macroinvertebrates, come back in, chart it all out, and then and analyze their data. So that's our core program that we have here. We also do public programming on the weekends or in the evening. So you can take a look. We'll have things coming up this fall, our Before the S'mores program at nighttime. So get what you're getting, right? Before the S'mores, we have mm-hmm. a program. And so we'll have a several of those this fall, and we're going to be doing fishing and archery. I was putting those together.
fishery, I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I like that. We're going fishery. So we'll have those happening this fall. And so, yeah, we have lots of stuff happening. And, of course, we're open on Saturdays. We're open Tuesday through Friday from 9 to 4, and then on Saturdays from 7 to 4. So
nice. Yeah. When you were talking about AP environmental mm-hmm. classes, that's the class that made me love the environment.
Oh,
before
cool.
that,
awesome.
I was a high heel wearing, partying folk. I still partied after that class, but I just wasn't really aware mm-hmm. of nature.
Yeah.
Even though I grew up on a ranch in Mexico, I have the plant lady as my mom. It was just kind of like I was rebelling against, I think, my upbringing. But then my AP environmental science class was really what
opened my eyes to kind of like that connection to nature. And I tell people I reconnected to nature through science. Mm-hmm, and that's one mm-hmm. of the reasons why I'm so yeah. passionate about, you know, learning some of the more scientific aspects of nature, if that's what interests you, because there's so many different paths that you can get connected yeah. back mm-hmm, into it. Mm-hmm. So I love that y'all are working with AP Environmental Science people, because that was my, that's my.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
I love hearing stories like that. Because like, well, yeah, maybe we'll influence somebody else.
Yes. It's amazing. It's amazing. Okay, I'm gonna gonna turn a little bit from the education piece, but we can always go back because I know that's something that my mom loves to talk about. What are wetland mitigation credits? And you mentioned them a little bit ago, and yes. when I was doing my research, I came across, you know, what that term on your website, and I'm familiar with carbon offsets, for example. Are they similar, or what exactly are they?
They are. They're very similar. So a part of the property on the other side of the river belongs to Wetlands Management, and that's part of the Rosa Corporation under their umbrella. And he has trees there to grow like a bottomland hardwood forest again, because that's what that property originally was. And so that's if someone in Texas goes into a wetland area and destroys wetlands for whatever purpose that was, they can buy mitigation credits, just kind of like the carbon offset. And that's what that is. It's basically what that is. Same kind of item there.
Yeah, like a trade and offset.
Yeah,
got
exactly.
it. And not to get too technical, mm-hmm. but how does that work? Is like an ongoing thing, or is it just a one-time... You destroyed like 1 acre, mm-hmm. you purchased 1 acre here. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
You know, I don't. That's a really good question. Yeah. I need to ask Wilson, who's in charge of that, Wilson Sands. And so I'm not really sure how that works. It's the same with the credit. I don't even know how that works, carbon offset.
Honestly,
you could sell the same piece of land to like a million people, yeah. right? And they would never know.
Seriously,
so
Linda,
I
think it's a market that it just isn't super well known yet. It's growing mm-hmm, a lot, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it's just a term that I had never really come across.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
I need to email him about something. So I think I'm going to ask
him
that question.
Ask him.
That's something that we need
like,
to
is
know.
Is it recurring? Is it one time? How does that work?
I think that's really one time, to
okay.
be honest with you, because they did. I would think that they have to do that within their building period.
Yeah.
Know, whatever they're destroying. That would be my educated guess. That's probably a one time thing, but I don't know. I'll ask him.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'll let you know.
Okay, we were chatting, you may be familiar with this organization, may not, but we were chatting with the Friends of North Haven Trail a few weeks ago, and it's this nonprofit in Dallas that took the basically wasted space underneath the massive Encore power lines and created a walking trail. Mm-hmm. And they partnered with the city, they partnered with Encore, they got all these different partnerships to make this work.
Great.
And so we got a really interesting perspective from them in terms of what it's like to partner, to bring different like public, mm-hmm. private organizations together and partner to be able to pull off a project that's mm-hmm. quite large.
Right, right.
And you were saying, you know, at the beginning, John Bunker Sands wasn't able to do this because it's a huge undertaking and it was just one individual. From your experience working here and being involved, what have you seen in terms of this partnership? How beneficial is it? What is it like to really bring public, private organizations and entities together to make something like this work? And yeah, just your experience with that. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that these large projects happen because of these partnerships.
Mm-hmm. They do. And partnerships to us are extremely important. We've partnered from the beginning with different people for education programming. I don't know if you're familiar with our Eagle Tower. So we have a nesting pair of bald eagles. And they were originally nesting in the Encore power lines. And they were afraid that the young eaglets, when they fledged, they could hit their wings on the lines. And then they have a death of an eagle. So we partnered with Encore, and there's several partners. I'm probably not going to get them all because we needed heavy machinery. I'm not sure which partner that. I can't remember their name. And then we had the Falcon Steel. It's now another name, but I can't remember. But they built Falcon Steel, built a tower, and then Encore was out, and the people with the equipment were out, and they took down the one arm, went to that tower, put it on the tower. So it looks like it's an electrical tower, but there's nothing hooked to it. So that was a great partnership that never could have happened. I think we figured out it was like $150,000 or something like that. Hmm. And then we just had a camp last 2 weeks ago called Aquatic Science Investigations, ASI, Aquatic Science Investigations. And Encore actually funded that. So it's so great to hear them funding something with North Haven. They funded part of the tower. They funded our camp. And they're just very, very environmentally aware for their business. And that's so nice. And they want to be part of it too, Encore does. They don't just kind of give you money and they, okay, see you later. Wow. But they really want to be part of it. They want to come and take pictures, take videos to really, you know, kind of put in their archives too and send people out. So we're really thankful to them. So we partner a lot with Encore. Our two partnerships here with North Texas and Rosewood Corporation, this whole thing could never have happened if it wasn't for that partnership. And there's a lot of little partnerships that happen kind of along the way that we have with nature centers in the area. The Audubon, both at Trinity River and Dogwood, and other ones as well. So I think partnerships, they have to be there. I think that's kind of what makes the world go around, if you will.
One thing I was just going to add for our listeners, if you are an individual and have an awesome idea, it may seem daunting, but I love that, you know, Linda is talking about how there are big organizations, big companies out there that really do want to be involved. And even if they seem like this massive company and they're unapproachable, you just never know. Like, create your little nonprofit, put it out there, and start reaching out to people that do have the financial means to make things happen, because there are people out there. And exactly, like Encore, for those of you who don't know, is the company in charge of distributing our electricity. So they're the poles and wires in the North Texas area. You would have never thought that an electricity distribution company would be so involved with, you know, these projects, but these are two projects that we've, you know, just we've come across in the last few weeks that Encore has been a major partner. So
you have to go out and ask, because I know that we also partner with our Trinity Valley Electric Co-op. That's who services the electricity out here. And it's just $2,000 here, $4,000 there, but those are small amounts. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, the program that we had, it wasn't some major massive thing. It was just this 1 week program that was was phenomenal. It was great. And we could never have had it without that. So you do just kind of have to ask.
Well, kudos to Encore.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. You were talking about the Eagle. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the class that I came out here one Saturday morning was bird watching. Okay. And I was reading on y'all's website that there have been 257 documented sightings of different species of birds out here. Tell us about the migratory birds coming through here and the birds that live here year round. And I don't know, I hope that some of the listeners have been able to hear the birds chirping and flying around in the background.
And also hearing this little cute class going on next to us. These cute little kids are doing something fun. So if you hear something in the background, just smile, because it's cute kids learning.
And what's so funny is they're doing Migration Headache, which is the game. So they're doing a bird thing right now. Perfect timing for the question.
We need to come on site for for our podcast interviews more often. This is the first one and I'm loving it.
So birds obviously are a really big thing here. And before the wetland was here, the birds would still go through migration about beginning of November, first couple weeks of November. They're coming from the north heading south, and we get a lot of birds staying here then. And then the other migration period comes about first couple weeks in April, somewhere in there, and then they'll be flying back the other way. So when this wasn't here, the birds would go somewhere else. And we've been accused of stealing our birds, because now the birds land here. And they're not in the in the people's ponds a couple miles from here. You know,
because they're way happier here.
Yeah, so
if I were a bird, I'd land here too.
Exactly, exactly. And so we have, I think now it's like 268 species seen. However, those, when you read that number, those birds are found by people who really know their birds. In fact, there's a lady down there in the blue ball cap. She's fantastic. fantastic. She can probably spot a bird like a mile away and know what it is. So there aren't birds that everyday person's going to see. Sometimes they've only been here once. I think we saw, like, a peregrine falcon was here once and a massive duck was here once. But you still count them on your count in case you see them again or know that they could be here. So we are the hot spot for birding, if you will. For the migration. But then there's a lot of places the Christmas bird count happens in usually the first weekend in January, and we partner with Trinity River Audubon and do that. And so that kind of gives us a really good idea of what's here. So we do really do have some great birds in, in the Dallas area and Kaufman County where we are. So you can come here and see a lot of the waterfowl. For those people who are just beginning into birding, waterfowl is always better because they sit in one place and you can see them. Mm. Even though the little ones are bright and colorful, they flit around and then it's frustrating. So I would suggest to come in the winter and see them because they'll sit and you can kind of do them a little bit better.
Nice. Well, that's actually a great segue into my next and my final question as we start wrapping it up. My mom always asks a question to all of our guests, but how can people learn more about you, get involved, find out, donate, all of the things?
Sure. Those are all great questions. I'm so glad you asked. So the John Bunker Sands Wetland Center, we are located in Combine, which is just south of the Dallas County line. Seagoville's there, and then there's Combine. So we are just inside Kaufman County. We're only about 25 miles southeast of Dallas. So we're not that far. We get a lot of, well, my gosh, you're so far away. And then people come here. People usually get here like 45 minutes early because they don't know how long it's going to take them to get here.
It's so close.
Yeah, it is very close.
We were here 30 minutes early today.
And so it's not very far at all. Our website is wetlandcenter.com. You can go there and see that. We're actually getting that all redone. We're so excited by the fall. And then we also have a Twitter account, Facebook. It's either JBS Wetland Center or John Bunker Sands Wetland Center for all of those. So that's a great way to find out what we're doing.
How about Instagram?
Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. We have an Instagram. We have a YouTube channel, so you can check it out there. And I have to throw this in there too, and that is we are growing. We're actually constructing 2 new classrooms, and they're like silos. If you come here, we are part of a ranch. It was original 5,000-acre ranch, so there's silos across the street, so we kind of mimic the silos that are across the street, and so we're looking forward to having more schools here. Now, before COVID was when we started raising money for that, and COVID came, and it was like, well, do we build or not, because we're not having any schools. Well, when you get money, you can't use it for anything else. And as you know, everything's getting more expensive. So we decided to go ahead and build. And so we will be using our new space for classes. We're going to start renting for weddings. If anybody is out there thinking you'd like to have an outdoor wedding, come check us out. We have a boardwalk that's 0.6 miles long that you can go walking on. So it's a great space and a great spot. And as I mentioned earlier, we are open from 9 to 4, Tuesday through Friday. And then we're open every Saturday from 7 o'clock until 4. Those are our hours.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And we encourage everyone to come out and see the fascinating things that they're doing here. It's just, you will not be disappointed. So, okay, Linda, our final question that we ask everyone is, what do you think is the most important thing each individual can do to help reverse climate change and global warming?
Probably, I think, There's a lot of different things you can do, from big things and, you know, to small things. During our summer camp, when we had the students here, there's one student who's getting involved as a senior in just some different things that are already taking place. I think sometimes people think they have to reinvent the wheel and got to come up with a brand new idea. But really, in the North Texas area, there's already several organizations that that's one of their main tenets, and getting involved in an organization like that, you can get kind of in on the bigger picture, if you will. Individually, I think it's just awareness, people being aware of what they're using, and educating themselves about those little things that you can do about climate change, and just be aware of things.
I loved how y'all even used the restroom to educate people. about only take two paper towels. And then on the back of the door, this stall door, you had mm-hmm. information there. And then you can lift the handle up or down for the amount of water flow you need for the toilet. And just even the restroom, my gosh, yeah, made people there's aware of what's going on.
Yeah. So I think just those little things, you know, I know for a lot of people, they don't have choices in some of those things, like your vehicles. Well, you know, especially students, they don't have a choice, right? Yeah. I mean, because they're not, but they will in the future. Mm-hmm. And just doing those different things at home, you know, composting, all those little sustainability things. I think that's kind of where the answer is. Granted, it is going to be in the larger things too, but if we are encouraging people to do those smaller things now, as they get older, then they can become involved in those bigger things. But you have to instill that. Yeah, you're going to have those people who are adults now who all of a sudden they catch fire and they're on the go. But I think just instilling that into the younger population, and as they grow, then they can become involved in the larger operation, if you will, and be more educated about it. So they actually can make more of an impact in that larger place because they started with the small.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And when people ask me about, you know, what I think it means to live sustainably and whatnot, I get questions like that a lot. I like to reframe it instead of sustainable living as conscious living.
Because, oh, there you go. That's good.
Because some people that we've chatted with get really bogged down in guilt and shame because they're not living sustainably and what that entails. But I really feel like just reframe it as conscious living. And it's mm-hmm. not going to be a zero to perfect. It's why it will never be perfect overnight. But it's just, you know, make yourself aware, make yourself informed, as you were mm-hmm. saying, mm-hmm. make the decisions as best you can at the moment, and then just keep going, and then exactly. just keep learning and keep getting better. It's mm-hmm. just, that's kind of the way it is with everything else. We just look at, I feel like a lot of people, especially these days, look at sustainable living as a different thing from the rest of life. Like, no one expects you to be perfect anywhere else.
What's so funny is that what we call sustainable living, it was the norm.
Yeah.
Back in the 50s, the 40s, they didn't make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
And so I think the whole guilt thing is a real thing. And I don't know, you know, obviously people feel guilty because it's presented to them in that way. Mm-hmm. And I have a difficulty with that.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, you know, there's no need to do that. You just need to show living sustainably. They used to do this, and whatever year it was, it's nothing new. There isn't anything new about sustainable living. But technology, yes, I get that. But really, if you think back, the sustainable living even was taking place in the 60s, 70s, right?
Yeah.
And it does, I think, with all of our technology that we have today, there's way more choices not to live sustainably.
That's
and
true.
It's easier to use the technology. It's easier to do certain things. But living in a sustainable manner, it does require you to do some different things, and it's not as comfortable, if you will. You know, a real small example for us, for my husband and I, is there is no recycling in our area. We live outside the county in Ellis County. But we still recycled. That meant my husband had to fill up my car or his entire truck bed with recyclables once or twice a month. And we had to drive up to Dallas to put them in the bins that are up there. So it would have been easier for us to just throw it away. And that's an example of making that conscious choice, even though we didn't have a recycling area. Now we do. So we're
good. That's awesome.
But, you know, for 13 years of our living at this particular place, we were driving up to Dallas and, you know, putting our, and he works up there too. So
major kudos. That's awesome.
So I think those little things you can do and being aware of that.
Yeah.
It was a little harder, but you know, once you put it into your, you know, line of thinking, you know where things go. So that's just an example.
Yeah. I love that. It's like, maybe it'd be easier not to brush your teeth, but you know, once you get used to brushing your teeth, it's not too bad. You feel pretty clean.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear you brushed those beautiful teeth that had braces on them.
Yes, my mom did invest a bit in my teeth.
My mom too.
Linda, thank you so much. And a part of me doesn't want to get off of these really comfortable wooden rocking chairs. Listeners, you don't see us right now, but it's very comfortable. But for those of you on Patreon with us, Linda's going to give us a little tour around the wetlands. Yes, so we I are going to get off of these chairs and go get a little tour. I'm so excited. Linda, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I've learned so much about wetlands. I can say that I didn't know very much before researching and talking to you. So this is great. And I'm so glad my mom brought me here.
Well, thank you all for coming out. It's exciting to see what you guys are doing. And now that you called her the plant lady, now I'm going to talk to her more about that to maybe, you know, work out or come out here and do something.
Yes. I would love that. Yes. And Linda, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise with us. We really appreciate it. And we've learned so much, and we know our listeners are going to learn so much, too.
Thank you for what you guys do and for making it available for people to learn and to, you know, share as well. So awesome. Thank you.
Off to the wetland. We'll see y'all next time.